Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Well, today is Sunday, May 28th, 2006, and this is show number 45. In the United States, this is Memorial Day, a day when we think about the fallen soldiers that have defended the country over the years. It's also a time of barbecues, and in my world, it's a time of soccer games. Kyle has had a big soccer tournament this weekend out in Downey, and I got to tell you, they're winning. They're actually in first place right now. They've won three games, and they go into the quarterfinals tomorrow morning, so this is a lot of fun. We go out and sit around with friends in the sunshine and watch the kids play. It's a really good time. For some reason, we're also cat-sitting a tiny little kitten named Melvin. And if you hear me yell, no, Melvin, that's because right now he's actually fighting with me to get his fingers on the screen, which I wouldn't mind if he didn't have those razor blade sharp claws. So anyway, that's been a real adventure for us. I'll include a picture of Melvin in the show notes. I got to tell you, my buddy Ron has come up with a really interesting gift for my birthday this year. I don't quite understand it completely, but I'm using it right now. It's called the SP01 Condenser Microphone Shock Mount. My Samson microphone is now sitting in sort of a spidery-looking rubber band thing. Basically, it's a vibration isolator so that I can do anything I want with the microphone and it doesn't make any noise. I'll include a picture because you really got to see what this thing looks like. But I'm going to move the microphone back and forth. I'm actually sliding it on the table, and the mic is jiggling, and my sound might be going in and out, but you're not hearing that that normally happens if I bump the microphone in the middle of a recording. Anyway, I thought you'd get a kick out of that big enhancement to the show. We'll see what a big difference it makes. Last week, I reviewed an FTP client that my friend Tim told me about, and I incorrectly called it Transit throughout the review, but the real name of the tool is Transmit, like to transmit information. Duh. Anyway, Transmit is from panic.com. I hope I didn't throw anybody off the track, and I sure hope I didn't offend the developers. It's a pretty cool little tool. You may remember listener Phil, who sent along a cool tool called iStat Pro that gives you all kind of cool stats as a widget in Tiger and tells you all kinds of really, really nifty little things. But unfortunately, it doesn't actually work under the Intel-based iMacs. It comes up, but it doesn't come up with the right information. Well, he didn't sit by and just leave me in the lurch there. He kept searching, and he found an application called Core Duo Temp that measures the temperature on the CPU, which is something I've really been looking for with all of my temperature issues. The best thing I had before would only tell me the temperature at the hard disk, so it's kind of cool to watch the temperature of the dual core there. Core Duo Temp is from macbricol.free.fr. I'm going to spell that for you. It's macbricol.free.fr. So I'm assuming that's a French company. Either that or FR stands for free. But anyway, it's a freeware application that actually uses a kernel extension called Speedit from speedit.increw.org. I'm not exactly sure what a kernel extension is, but I know it's something a little more serious than a regular application, but of course I loaded it anyway. Phil found this cool tool through a podcast called Mac OSG, which stands for Mac OS Group, which is hosted at macosg.com. I'm going to check them out, got them on the iPod, think I might give them a listen during my run tomorrow. Always looking for a good podcast. Thanks for the tip, Phil. Last week, I reported that the forums on Parallels were gone, and I was really bummed because I really rely on that forum to get good information on what's going on in the development of that project. But listener Dave and later listener, did you hear those beeps? That was Melvin walking in the keyboard. Thanks, Melvin, for your help. Anyway, listener Dave and then later listener Ong sent in some great news after the show. Somehow they were able to find an article explaining what had happened to the Parallels forums. They said that the forum is not down and never will be. Registered forum members are still able to post new threads, ask questions, respond to other posts, and read every single thread and post that's on the forum. All they did is remove the links from their main menu structure. After much discussion, they decided to do this because the forum was getting flooded with posts from non-Parallels users, and many of the threads popping up were completely off-topic. So when the forum became diluted with off-topic posts and threads, they felt that it became less useful to the people who needed it most, Parallels customers, evaluators, and beta testers, and it makes it harder for the support teams to answer important technical questions. They're going to be closely watching the forum over the next few weeks and may end up tweaking their approach based on those observations. They assured that the forum will never, ever close. By the way, if you're looking for the forum, it's at forum.parallels.com. Well, thank you, Dave, for the fantastic news. I was so happy to be able to go back in and find out that, you know, things like I'm not the only one who cares about a particular problem. Hey, Dave, I tried to write back to you because I wanted to ask you some more questions, but my emails got bounced back when I replied. One thing I'm bummed about in the release candidate is that you can't use Command Tab to jump between applications if you're inside Parallels. Normally, or the way it used to work through Beta 6 was you could hit Command Tab and you could swap between the applications. So if you had Parallels in full screen mode and a virtual desktop manager like Virtue that I talked about last week, you can actually flip this nice cube around where it's Windows, it's a Mac, it's a Windows, it's a Mac. It was kind of fun. But the latest release seems to have botched that up, so I can't use Command Tab to switch out of the application. I'm wondering if it's an issue with Parallels tools I need to reinstall, or which, of course, I already tried, but maybe there's something else I could do. And I was also curious if you've ever gotten the shared folders things to work right. That doesn't really work for me pretty much at all anymore. So I think I've got something boogered up. Anyway, send me another email and let me know how I can get through to you. And I would really like to chat some more. And listener Ong, maybe you could help me out too. One featured section this week is called Stupid Mac Tricks. The new Intel-based Macs have a sudden motion sensor built into them so that if you drop your laptop, the sensor tells the head to move away from the disk so that you don't crash your disk drive when you drop your laptop. This is a noble duty to be sure, but what if you could use that tool to turn your Mac into a lightsaber from Star Wars? Wouldn't that be awesome, dude? That'd be so cool. Anyway, enter Mac Saber from iSnoop.net. This little beta program, gotta love a beta program, installs quickly, and when launched, you just grab your laptop and carelessly swing it around, and it sounds just like you're a Jedi Knight. It's possible that I've hit the pinnacle of stupid ways to abuse my Macintosh with that. Let me see if I can get it to come up right now. That would be fun. Ah, phooey. I don't think I can find it that quickly. Wait a minute. Stay with me. Mac Saber. Oh, where did I put it? I put it in utilities. Ah, doggone it. Can't find it. Oh, well, you'll have to trust me. Basically, it would just sound like, a lightsaber in the room if I were able to find it. Anyway, I just love stuff like that. I'm wondering, in the Windows world, do you have people doing things that stupid with their computers? I just love it. So let's see, what's next? Oh, on a more intellectual note, my friend Jay sent me a link to a cool podcast you might want to check out. Not that Jay wouldn't mind using his Mac as a lightsaber. I mean, you know, he's that kind of guy. He'd appreciate it. But this podcast is put out by the Jet Propulsion Labs, or JPL, and it's called JPL Podcast, Voyager Living on the Edge of the Solar System. Here's an excerpt of the description of the podcast on the JPL website. Voyager, still going strong after nearly 30 years. NASA's twin Voyager spacecraft are beaming back new information about the final frontier of our solar system, including evidence of potholes in the turbulent zone near the edge. A podcast featuring an interview with Voyager project scientist Dr. Ed Stone of Caltech is online at jpl.nasa.gov/multimedia. The interview includes information about the latest findings, as well as highlights from the past 29 years of the Voyager's journey through space. In case you're on the young side, Voyager 1 and 2 launched in 1977 on a mission to study the outer planets of our solar system, and they're now on their way to becoming the first spacecraft ever to leave our solar system. If you like this podcast, Additional JPL podcasts are available at jpl.nasa.gov/multimedia. PC Magazine had an interesting article about Vista. Interesting in that the author was so clearly wowed by what was coming, which is in contrast to the collective yawn I've been hearing from the rest of the industry. Perhaps the author was just an optimist who was glad to see existing technology put into Windows instead of having only five-year-old technology in their operating system. I went through the article, and I made determinations of whether each new feature of Vista, as described, was already in OS X, or whether this was actually something new that the author was describing. I decided to go through each of those things and then very unscientifically make a scorecard of how I think Vista measures up. The title of the article was Why You Want Vista Now, written by John Kleiman, and I've included a link in the show notes to the entire article if you're interested. He breaks the review up into sections, so it'll make us easier to walk through it. I'll give Vista the point if they had the new feature first, and now Windows has it, or OS X gets it if OS X already had it by the time Vista adds it. Does that make sense? If OS X already has it, OS X gets a point, but if it's a feature that OS X doesn't have, then Vista gets the point. All right, let's get started. The first category is called Because It's Cool. In the Because It's Cool category, he cites the see-through windows you'll get if you turn on a feature called Aero Glass. From what I've seen in photos, it's a beautiful effect that you can turn off if you don't have the fastest processor or don't want to waste cycles on it. But if you have the processor, it looks like it's really, really gorgeous. OS X does not have see-through windows that I know of, so I'm going to give a point to Vista. Task switching is pretty too, which we do have in OS X, but in Vista you see a thumbnail of the task. I'm not sure if it's windows within an application or a representative window from each app. Like what if you have five browser windows open or six Microsoft Office documents? I don't know which one it picks. But I'm going to give OS X 1 point, and I'll give Vista a half a point for the thumbnail enhancement. Everyone is excited about the start menu being uncluttered now, but since OS X doesn't use a start menu, this would kind of be a null vote, so I don't know why that would be cool or necessary, especially since this is kind of one of those, it's cool because it's not near as annoying as it used to be type of enhancement. Vista has a Windows tab key to spin through a 3D Rolodex of open applications. Apple has had this through the command tab for ages, that's what I was just talking about a few minutes ago, but it does not spin in 3D. This is functionally equivalent, but since this is in the Because It's Cool section, we'll go ahead and give Vista half a point again, and OS X gets 1 point. So our net score for this section, called Because It's Cool, is OS X 2, Vista 2. The next section is called For a Better Internet Experience. Get this, IE now has an RSS reader built right into it. Wait, doesn't Safari already have that? Yeah, we kind of do. Point to OS X. I have to give the next point to Vista for being able to find your contacts right in Windows Explorer and use the context menu to be able to send an email message. That's kind of cool to have it right available right there. We can do that in OS X with a free utility called Quicksilver that I'm addicted to, but it's not built into OS X, so Vista still gets the point. Hey, IE7 has tab browsing. Sorry. Been there, done that. Hard to justify taking a point for that one. It's too pitiful. So I'm just not going to give OS X a point for it because it's just so sad that IE7 just got it. So no point for OS X. There's one thing not specifically called out in this article, but I'm going to give the point to Vista for it anyway. Microsoft has joined the standard that will show a bright colored bar. I want to say it's red. I can't remember because I read it elsewhere. When you're at a non-secure site, And since Apple has chosen not to deploy that new standard yet, I'm going to give the point to Vista. There is kind of a reference to it for anti-phishing scams and that sort of thing in the article. But I think it's cool that Microsoft is in the standards group that's coming up with a way where you'll always know whatever browser you're in. If you see that bright red logo, you're in big trouble. You're not on a secure site anymore. IE7 also has a feature for shrink-to-fit printing, which keeps your printing from falling off the page. How many times has that happened to you? Happens to me all the time. big point for Vista. I know you can go into page setup and shrink by hand in OS X, but that's tedious and not very accurate. Vista's mail client also allows you to do incremental search in the search box, but of course Apple Mail's done that already. So net score for the section Better Internet Experience, net score is OS X, 2 points, Vista has 3. The next section is called To Regain Control of Your Files. Vista includes breadcrumbs to aid you in finding your way back as you've navigated deep within a directory, and these breadcrumbs will become clickable, sort of like being able to find your path back to home. Sorry, Microsoft, OS X has had that, boy, as far back as I can remember. At the top of every Finder window, you'll see the name of the folder you're in, and if you click on that with the Command key held down, you'll see your breadcrumbs trail right there. Point to OS X. Search is the next topic, and it's hard to not just give game, set, and match to OS X right here, but especially since they dropped a lot of their search stuff. But for completion's sake, we'll go through this one. In the Start menu, Vista has a search window, and as you start to type in that box, it will show you matches for application names, file contents, and even emails. It's called Spotlight in OS X. Been there, done that. But now, if Vista could search the contents of email from third-party applications, that would be impressive, but they don't mention they can do that. So, point to OS X. Vista has parametric searches, so you can add search terms together, like files with the word box in them that were created between January 05 and January 06. Yeah, sorry, OS X has that too. Point OS X. In Vista, you can save these searches as dynamically updated folders. And again, OS X has that. They're called smart folders. Another point for OS X. Wait. I found a point for Vista. It has thumbnails of files that have the actual contents represented. So if you're looking at the thumbnail, instead of just looking like a generic PowerPoint file, it would actually look like the actual PowerPoint file. Not sure this is terribly useful, because like, how would you show if it were a 10-page PowerPoint file? Which one would they show? No whining, though. No whining. Point to Vista. Windows Explorer allows you to add meta tags to files, such as keywords or ratings. I'm going to give OS X 2 points for this, because I'm sure OS 9 had this, and heck, it might be as far back as System 7. You do a get info in any file, and you can put in your little tags there to search on. You can call foul if you want for me giving 2 points to OS X, but hey, I get to do my own scoring system since this is my show. Well, if you're feeling sorry for Vista in this section, here's 1 point, and it's a good one. Vista includes file synchronization features and will allow you to roll back to previous versions of files. OS X, since it's Unix underneath, does include there's a utility called rsync, which will do file synchronization, but it's on the super geeky side. It's not really for the average user. So I'm going to give the point to Vista. To close out this section, Windows Vista includes a migration wizard that migrates your data and settings. This point has to go to OS X, since it's had that for a couple of versions, but I have to give an extra half point to OS X, because it doesn't just do your data and settings, it'll also migrate your applications. And the article says that Vista Migration Wizard will not move applications. So for regain control of your files, net score, OS X 6.5, and Vista has 1. All right, if you're feeling sorry for Vista before, you might want to skip this section. It's called New Multimedia Tools. The author describes the new Windows Photo Gallery. But as thrilled as John was with all the other enhancements of Vista, he was not impressed with the photo gallery. He said it's not as good as the free Picasa, which you might remember that I reviewed around Christmas time, and it's not as good as iPhoto. The main thing he was irritated with was the organizational tools. He actually called them an insult. So point to OS X. Photo Gallery does integrate in with the updated Movie Maker and allows you to burn a DVD with chapters and menus. But of course, iPhoto and iMovie and iDVD are all integrated, and you can do all that chapter and menu thing, so point to OS X. Windows Media Player 11 allows you to drag songs in to burn and cut and paste in album art. It also allows you to randomize the songs, and as John says, it can turn any MP3 player into an iPod shuffle, Whether this is a good thing is still up for debate, he says. I lumped all of that together, so I would only give OS X 1 point instead of 2 or 3, because all of these features have been in iTunes for quite some time. I couldn't bear to give Apple a point for the shuffle feature, because, personally, I find it quite silly, as it sounds like John does as well. NetScore, OS X 3, Vista, goose egg, nada, zip, 0. You got nothing that time. The next section is called Because You Need Better Security. The first thing they've done right at Microsoft here is change the security model so an administrator's password will now be required to install software. The author suggests that this will get pretty annoying, but I disagree. Well, maybe it will get annoying, but it's so necessary. I'm really glad OS X asked me for that. It's one of the primary reasons why OS X is less vulnerable to attack. Nefarious software simply cannot self-install. You have to give it permission. Even the recent exploit that was all huge in the news because there was a virus for the Mac, you had to give it your administrator password to install, along with a bunch of other stuff you had to do on purpose. Unfortunately, in the point scheme of things, I still have to give OS X the win here because it's had that feature ever since it became a Unix operating system. Vista now includes some parental controls that OS X, I'm not sure if OS X has, but an administrator will be allowed to limit the days and times each user is allowed on the computer, as well as establish a list of approved programs, excluding other programs from being allowed to be used. Vista also allows website filtering with blacklists and whitelists so that you can set up sites that your kids are allowed to see, and an activity monitor that will allow an administrator to view activity of users, including top 10 websites visited, and block sites that were attempted. It evidently isn't trivial to hack this monitoring, as the author tried to do it and was unsuccessful. Unfortunately, our teenagers probably can beat us all at hacking, but at least it wasn't an obvious way to get in and out of that. I was going to give Vista 2 points for this one because I didn't think OS X had any of this, and it seemed like pretty cool beans. I did a Google search, though, and I found a good description of all the things you can control on a kid's account. Boy, Kyle's going to be mad I read about this. But it includes the website filtering I described above. Basically, you give it a whitelist of sites they can visit, and then allows the child to request that a site be added to the whitelist. It also allows you to create a list of people from whom your child can receive mail and sends you a copy of an email before they're allowed to read it. I didn't see that OS X allowed you to limit the times of access to the computer like Vista does, but it does have the ability to control a list of programs the child is allowed to access. I'm afraid this one comes out a bit of a wash, with Vista having the time control and OS X having the mail control. So I'm going to call it a draw and give no points on this section. The new Windows Firewall does do something the Apple Firewall does not do. It protects you against unauthorized outbound traffic. This is really important to keep your machine from becoming one of those drone systems that are used for denial of service attacks or to spread spam. What happens is the hackers get into your system and they put something on it that allows them to use your machine for nefarious things. But the only way they can do that is with this unauthorized outbound traffic that you can now track with Vista. So, point to Vista. There's a new data encryption scheme in Vista. It's called BitLocker Drive Encryption. This allows you to secure your disk so that a special password is necessary in order to access it. Pretty important thing to be able to do with a laptop. In OS X, they call this File Vault, and you can secure just one user account rather than the entire boot disk. Sorry, Vista, point to Apple. I'm not sure this next one is a huge security risk, but I suppose it could be a problem. Vista allows you to sign a policy within the removable storage access feature so that a thumb drive or a CD or a portable media device can't read, write, or execute code on your machine. So these devices can't pull data off without you making a specific action. I don't think OS X has anything like this, so I'm going to give the point to Vista. Net score for this section on Because You Need Better Security, OS X 2, Vista 2. Our next section is called Because You're Mobile. In this section, the author described one very unique feature of Vista that I know Apple has never instituted. They called it Sideshow. You know how when you close some cell phones, you can still see the time on the front, or if someone calls, you can see their number without opening the phone? Sideshow works kind of like that. The hardware manufacturer has to build it in, obviously, because they have to put a little window on the laptop. But if they do put this little window in there, Vista will be able to display things like calendar, contact info, and email subject lines. The weird thing is that this Sideshow thing works even if the computer is turned off. This is a truly innovative idea, so I'm awarding 2 points to Vista. They've also added a sleep mode to Vista that actually works. So you tell it to sleep and it does. Gee, that's swell. Had that for ages in OS X, though. 1.0 OS X. Another feature that's been in OS X as far back as I can remember is the ability to plug in an external monitor and have the operating system automatically recognize the monitor and help you adjust the settings. Vista can do that too now, but I got to give the point to OS X for getting there first again. Net score on Because You're Mobile, OS X 2, Vista 2. The next section, and actually final segment in this article, is called To Work Together Better. This one's kind of long, but you're getting into the sprint to the finish here. Guess what Vista can do? It has a calendar that lets you schedule meetings with other people. Wow! Hey, even Lotus Notes has that, for crying out loud. Point to OS X for having calendar invitations available that work in the standard format used by companies like Outlook or applications like Outlook and Lotus. Vista also allows notebooks using wireless services to create an ad hoc network to join two computers together without using an internet connection. Yeah, it's called ad hoc in OS X too. Point to Apple. Vista does have something here that OS X does not. You can set up a collaboration session between two computers, allowing file synchronization and a shared workspace. Apple has nothing like this that I know of. I did use a third-party application from Research Department Niraj a few years ago that used to be called Hydra. It was named after the multi-headed Greek mythological character, but now it's called Sub-Etha Edit. This application allows two people to edit the same document in real time. But it doesn't sound like that's anywhere near as cool as what Vista can do. Plus, it's not part of OS X anyway. I'm going to give Vista 2 full points for this one, because it's something I can really see me using if OS X had that feature. Vista also allows you to use network-attached LCD projectors, something I didn't even know existed. It's possible OS X can do this, but I've sure never heard of it, so I kind of doubt it. It's a pretty cool idea. It'd be so nice to not be chasing around with wires and switch and connectors between laptops in the middle of a meeting so different people can control the screen. Heck, I was doing that just last week. So big point to Vista for that one. The next one is another one of those sad and pathetic ones. Vista now includes network profiles, so when you move your laptop from work where you might have an assigned IP or proxies that you have to use, and then you go home where maybe you're using DHCP and no proxies, you can just switch profiles. Sad and pathetic because from the earliest days of OS X, we had a feature called locations from which to choose. You could just toggle them back and forth anytime you want. 5 years late, Microsoft, point to OS X. Vista has a new feature called People Near Me, which allows or provides third-party developers tools to write peer-to-peer applications. Sure sounds like Apple's Bonjour services, doesn't it? Bonjour allows peer-to-peer applications such as music sharing in iTunes and auto-sensing of other devices on the network, such as printers. Point to OS X again. Vista now supports IPv6, which is a future technology that will allow us to have longer IP addresses, since so many things have network connections now we're actually running out of numbers. But of course, OS X has had that already. So point to OS X. Remote desktop allows you to connect into a Vista machine remotely, so like you want to help your mom out of a sticky computer problem all the way across the country. I wish desperately OS X had this. That would be pretty cool. It's faster than using VNC and that sort of thing, so it's pretty cool. Unfortunately, I'm not going to give the point to Vista, though, because it will not be included in the home version. That's when you really need it. You know, mom's in New Jersey, you got to help her out. What are you supposed to do? So I'm rewarding no points on that item. Vista's calendar application will now allow you to publish to a web dev server so that others can view your calendar and you can subscribe to their calendars and keep track of what they're up to. Sorry, guys. iCal has that already. Point to OS 10. The calendar can't sync with mobile devices, though, in Vista. What, are they nuts? What's a calendar these days without being able to take it with you? Jeez, point to OS 10 for syncing with the Palm OS, BlackBerry. Heck, even my iPod seems to have my calendar in there, and I didn't even do that on purpose. Even with 2 points given for the collaboration piece, OS 10 comes in at 7 points, and Vista with 3 for the section called To Work Together Better. I really did not keep tabs as I went through this, and while I may have my suspicions of who the final winner is, I don't actually know what the score is. Give me a minute to add it up. Oh, I'm pretending. You know I added it up before I got online, but I actually didn't do it until after I was done writing up my notes. The final score is, drum roll here, OS 10, 24.5, Vista 13. It was a tough game, and both competitors did their best, but the trophy must go to OS 10. Now, I have to add insult to injury here, and I'm sorry, but I just have to make fun of Microsoft for how long it's taking them to get out an operating system. Oh, by the way, that big noise, that was Melvin. I got to make fun of them for how long it's taking them to get out an operating system that's going to be so far behind what Apple can already do already. And they've had in their software for ages. In the PC Magazine article by John Kleiman, he has a great table I'll link to in the show notes that does a really good job of illustrating all of the slips and renames they've gone through over time. If you go to pcmag.com and in the search window type why Vista is late, you'll see a small graphic so you can enlarge that and it shows you the timeline. I'll give you a couple of highlights though. Would you believe Vista was first announced in October of 2001 with a predicted release date of mid-2003? 3 years late? There have been a total of five slips so far. And I'm sure the most embarrassing was when on March 13th of this year, they said it would be out in November. And 8 entire days later, they said it won't be out until January of next year. Oh, that's so sad. I'll soften the blow of my ridicule here by also pointing you to some really nice screenshots of Vista with good explanations for each one to tell you what you're looking at. There's no question this is going to be eye candy for sure. It really is gorgeous. Check it out at pcmag.com and do a search on Inside Windows Vista Beta 2. In that article, there's a link to the slideshow. Sure is pretty. Research Department Niraj has really outdone himself this time. He found a site called interact10ways.com. That's the number 10. And they've done some really wild things with Shockwave. The link he gave me starts with a photo of someone's face. When you move your cursor around, it becomes a white square, and then you find you really feel like clicking it, so you click somewhere on the image. The screen zooms in on the square you selected. Well, that's kind of interesting. Click again, and it goes even closer. At this point, you realize that this photo is one of those mosaics made up of all kinds of teeny, teeny, tiny little photo images. Click again, and you get maybe 9 of these teeny images now filling the screen. Your square cursor is now the size of one of these images. So click again, and you start zooming in on the image. So now you've got somebody else's face up close, or it's a bird, or it's a feather, or a rose, or whatever. So you start zooming in on that new one. The cool thing is you can zoom in on this indefinitely. It's called the Infinite Photo Journey. In some ways, I don't know why, but it's really mesmerizing. You just got to keep clicking and clicking. Again, the website is called interact10ways.com. After I played with that one, I backed up, I looked around in the website, and I found a bunch more really odd effects like this to play with. One of them was a sphere, and it had these pictures all around on it, and if you clicked in, you got to zoom in on it again like the other one. They were actually the same photos. I hope you find this as wild as I did. It was really, really fun to play with. My buddy Ron sent along some links to a couple of sites that help you easily find royalty-free photos that you're allowed to use on your blog or website. The first is called everystockphoto.com. I really like the color scheme of this site. It's very peaceful and professional looking. The keyword search is very obvious, which of course is the first thing you're going to need. They also list popular searches to help you get started, and they have a cool 4x5 mosaic of the most popular photos. I really liked a couple of those, so I can see why they were popular. I noticed that the photos themselves that they show are not actually hosted on Everystock Photo's website, but rather this is a search engine and organizational tool to look for photos that are online and under free use, such as Creative Commons licensing. They have a reference to the Creative Commons license, so if you want to be sure you understand what the different levels of Creative Commons mean and understand what your rights are, you can read up on it there. If you sign up with an account with everystockphoto.com, you get access to the forums and you can bookmark photos with tags. Pretty cool and useful site, and very pleasing, just nice organizational feel and very, very pleasing to look at. Very calm, pale kind of colors. Really liked it. The next one Ron sent me was called yotophoto.com. That's Y-O-T-O photo.com. This one's a little more of a shock to your senses because it's kind of wild colors and stuff, but it's still very well done. Again, there's an easy-to-find search window, which is the most important thing here, and the center of the site gives a great description of why you should be there. It says, Yotophoto is the first internet search engine for finding free-to-use photographs and images, now indexing over 250,000 Creative Commons, public domain, GNU FDL, and various other copyleft images. Copyleft, by the way, is a term that's in use now that signifies the opposite of a copyright, in that it's all about what you can do with someone else's work, not what you can't do like a copyright. Yotophoto has the popular searches shown by TagCloud. I don't know if you've seen this before, and if you have, if you understood what it was, but do you ever go on one of these sites where they've got a whole bunch of words kind of floating around on a page with all these different font sizes? Some things are huge and some are little, and it's kind of confusing. But what this is the big ones are the most popular searches, and it's done automatically, and the small ones are the least popular. It was a long time before someone told me what this silly format was supposed to mean, but now that I understand it, I can see how it's pretty useful. So check out Yotophoto and everystockphoto.com the next time you need a free photo or if you just want to look at really, really beautiful pictures. Thanks, Ron, for the great tip. I had a follow-up to the iTunes proposal I talked about last week. Last week, I quoted my friend Mike Tobin without giving him credit, and I really want to make sure I rectify that here. He's the one who told me about looking at the 5 o'clock a.m. time slot on the Apple New York store opening, and he said it would have a little surprise. My apologies again for not giving him credit, but I figure better late than never. If you didn't check this out, you really should. Apple did a time-lapse film for, I think it was 24 hours, of the crowd outside the store as it was opening. What Mike discovered was that during the 5 a.m. hour, a guy figured out what Apple was doing, so he raced home and he made up 3 signs, and he held each of them up to the camera for around 15 minutes so he could be sure you'd be able to read them. And it turns out the signs were asking his girlfriend to marry him. Isn't that cool? Well, Mike sent along an update this week, and evidently the girl, Ushi, said yes to the proposal. You can read the whole story over at kottke.org. That's kottke.org. Well, on that happy note, I'm going to wind up this episode of the No Silly Cast. Thanks for all who wrote in this week with ideas and suggestions. I really enjoy getting all the emails, so keep them coming. You can email me at allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.